What if I have to share custody?
Hunter's protectiveness surged, lighting his intense hazel eyes. We can throw this in the trash right now, Gentry. I haven't told Dad or anyone other than Sarah. She had an out. If Hunter promised, she knew he'd take the secret to his grave. But this kind of secret would corrode her relationship with Colt over time, even if he never knew why.
I can't do that to Colt.
She'd spent a lifetime picking on every one of her mother's failings, but even Jenna had never lied to her.
I started this. Now I have to see it through.
Okay. He scratched his forehead, looking almost sheepish, which was never something she saw before. You know, I still worry that some distant family member of Ty's will show up on our doorstep. But when you do what's right, you have to trust that love wins the day. Loving Colt, putting his needs over yours, will never steer you wrong.
Thanks.
She stood, taking the papers from his desk.
Guess I'd better go home and draft a message.
Photos will help. Hunter stood too. Smith won't have any doubts when he sees Colt's face.
Good point.
She certainly had hundreds to choose from. Ever since the photography classes she'd taken in college, the camera had been her refuge. A way of seeing people from a different vantage point. Of capturing the scraps of joy and contemplation, of sorrow and even anger, which all looked so similar despite everyone's differences. Hunter followed her to the family room, where Sarah was with the boys. Colt in her arms, Ty on the floor with a wooden toy truck. Through the room's windows, Gentry saw Ian on his phone, one finger in his ear, face pinched with the strain of hearing the caller.
So? Sarah asked. Are we happy with what we've learned?
Hunter put his arm around Gentry's shoulder.
He seems like a decent guy.
Then why does Gentry look like she's going to be sick? Sarah asked her husband, but kept her eyes locked with Gentry's.
It's a lot to process.
Gentry sneaked another peek at Ian, whose worried frown temporarily distracted her from her own concerns. She sighed, suddenly exhausted from the day's events. All she wanted to do was snuggle with her son.
Why is doing the right thing always so much harder than being selfish?
Sarah and Hunter both laughed, and her brother hugged her harder while saying,
On the upside, you feel good after doing the right thing, even when it's hard.
We'll see, Gentry grimaced. My old way of life felt pretty good compared with now.
Sarah's tight smile proved she doubted the truth of that statement. In any case, it seemed that she picked up on the need to change the subject.
Colt's colic is still pretty bad. I wonder if he has reflux. Maybe you should ask the doctor.
Gentry didn't have the energy to fend off Sarah's advice. Last time, Sarah's concerns had been validated, which also made Gentry a little gun-shy about arguing. But surely Dr. Evans would have thought to test for that by now, if it were a real possibility.
Maybe.
Sarah kissed Colt's head and then handed him to Hunter for a goodbye hug. She turned to Gentry, face glowing.
I let Ty hold him for a minute. Don't worry, though. They were safe on that chair while I knelt in front of them. They're adorable together.
Ian snapped a picture with his phone. Gentry crouched beside Ty to give him a hug, grateful that her son would have this bond throughout his life. Love wouldn't steer her wrong, she told herself again.
You're such a good big cousin.
He squirmed until she released him, which made her smile. He might not be of Hunter's blood, but he was just as stiff. And with all of Sarah's rules, His only chance of freedom would be sleepovers at Aunt Gentry's house.
Pumpkin, go color for a minute. Sarah pointed Ty toward a coloring book left open on the coffee table. When he wandered off, she resumed her conversation with Gentry.
Ian was telling me about your day. Sounds helpful and inventive.
Gentry failed to catch Ian's attention. He'd stopped pacing but remained on the phone.
It was a great day until Hunter called, Gentry admitted.
Ian said something along those lines, too.
Sarah bumped shoulders with Gentry. Maybe my matchmaking wasn't so far off base after all. Gentry had risked as much vulnerability as she could stomach in one day. She couldn't let anyone think she'd be pining for Ian once he left, either.
He's moving to Haiti soon. Not exactly an ideal boyfriend.
You never know what might happen in the future. He won't live there forever.
Given how difficult it had been for Ian to share the story of his father's death, Gentry didn't think she should tell Sarah about the guilt Ian felt, however absurd. That left her unable to explain why Ian could be there for quite some time. Even if he didn't spend his life in Haiti, there'd be another crisis somewhere in the world.
I won't pin my hopes on a maybe.
Besides, Smith might come to town, and who knows what that'll mean for all of us. She felt a frown form. Then Ian came inside. He nodded at Hunter and stood by the sofa, hands restlessly tapping against its back, gaze darting around as if searching for an answer he couldn't find. Gentry reached for Colt, who'd been surprisingly calm in her brother's arms.
We'll get out of your hair now.
Okay. Hunter handed him over like he was made of fine porcelain. He gave her a kiss. Call me if you need anything. He then shook Ian's hand, and the two of them exchanged pleasantries for a moment while Sarah retrieved Colt's diaper bag. Outside, Ian helped Gentry reload the car. She waited for him to ask her questions, but he didn't. Whatever his call had been about consumed him. She decided not to push for information, but his lack of interest in Smith simmered. They drove the mile to her condo in silence and unpacked the car without a word, too. Inside, she dropped the diaper bag on the floor and laid Colt in his playpen.
I'll leave you alone for a while, Ian said, starting up the stairs, barely looking at her.
Gentry called out, Are you mad at me, or is there some other reason for the silent treatment?
He stopped on the third tread and glanced at the photos on the wall, reminders of the direction Gentry's life was taking, which in no way fit in with his plans. Plans that foundered while he lived here in luxury. The fact he'd so quickly succumbed to comfort clawed at him, especially after speaking with Archer. Looking over his shoulder, he said,
You've got a lot to sort through. I don't want to pry.
A lot has happened today.
She nodded to the sofa, where they'd made love not long ago.
I know we both suck at this, but maybe we should talk about how we feel.
Weeks ago, the idea of suburban life had seemed ill-suited to him, but his feelings had softened. He might have dragged out his return to Haiti for a few more weeks, absent the discovery of Smith or the phone call he'd just received. Caring for Colt had given him a special purpose, and together with Gentry, lulled him into a sense of belonging, a glimpse at the kind of family life he'd never known. But this wasn't his family. Another man fathered the beautiful boy staring at Ian from the photo gallery. One who'd be arriving all too soon.
Gentry, he sighed. I'm sorry.
but I'm not in the mood right now.
What was that call you got at my brother's? Gentry's hands were now on her hips.
Nothing that involves you.
Fine.
She marched across the entry to the bottom of the stairwell, her cheeks as red as if he'd slapped her.
Don't you want to know anything about Smith? Peter?
Peter Smith. Gentry and Peter.
Colton Cabot Smith.
Each iteration turned his stomach.
Not particularly.
I thought you cared about Colt and me.
Her words came at him like darts.
I do. Hadn't he made that rather obvious this afternoon? He'd never look at her or her sofa the same way.
That's why I don't want to think about Peter Smith.
They stared at each other.
You'll do what's best for Colt. My opinions about his father are irrelevant.
They're relevant to me, and I could use someone to talk to right now. I've got a lot to process, you know?
He had to put distance between them, for both their sakes.
Call a friend.
I thought you were a friend.
A girlfriend.
He didn't want to discuss another man she'd slept with. Not here, and not now, anyway.
My girlfriend's bailed when I dropped out of the party scene.
So, call your sister.
Her green eyes narrowed to slits. She didn't say a word, although he knew at least three snide remarks had passed through her quick mind. Then, she closed her eyes. When she opened them, she sighed, circling her index finger between them.
I know this move, you know. You're pushing me away to protect yourself, but you've met your match, Ian Crawford. I'm not going to take the bait.
Make no mistake. We're going to hash this out.
There's nothing to hash out.
When he didn't elaborate, she asked,
Do you regret today?
He wished it were that simple.
We were impulsive. In light of all the circumstances, doesn't it seem like a mistake?
A mistake?
You know what I mean. Being a nanny was supposed to be a temporary job. I never planned to get involved with you and your family. Meanwhile, there are ransom notes and other crises going on while I'm here changing diapers and indulging.
He let that thought die.
The best thing I can do for both of us is to pack up and move out.
Those final words hung there between them, a challenge and an insult rolled into one. Disgusted with himself, he would have welcomed a kick in the groin. He braced for a rant, but now her eyes were wide with concern.
Ransom note? She asked. For the little boy whose mother was shot?
Ian sank onto the step, keeping one hand on the banister.
Yes, a ransom demand came this afternoon.
What do the cops say?
Ian scoffed.
It's not like here. Kidnappings are sometimes negotiated by lawyers. So far as I know, the police don't have any leads.
She raked her hands through her hair and tugged it.
Absolutely nuts.
Archer says Marie's family is trying to come up with money, but they aren't wealthy, and she didn't have life insurance.
Gentry fell silent, her gaze cutting to Colt and then back again.
How much?
Pardon? Her palms flipped upward.
What's the ransom?
$15,000.
$15,000? For a woman's life and a kid's freedom?
Astonished anew, Gentry shook her head.
So much tragedy for a measly $15,000.
A measly $15,000?
That's a lot of money for most people, especially in a country where the average per capita income is probably less than you spend on a pair of shoes.
Her face blanked, as if it couldn't compute what he'd said,
even as he regretted the nasty barb. Colt cried out in response to Ian's voice, which had fired off like a machine gun. Gentry turned, without a word, and mollified her son. Then walked to her purse, pulled out her checkbook, and wrote a check. She strode back to Ian, waving the paper. "Here." He didn't take it, so she let it drop onto his lap. "I can't take this." He tried to hand it back, but she tucked her hands under her armpits. "You don't even know these people. Don't do this to prove some point."
"Prove a point?"
Her face puckered. "I don't need to know someone to want to save a terrified little boy who watched his mother die on the street. Take the fucking money, Ian, and send it to whomever so Timmy can come home. I might not have control over most things in my life, but this I can fix." Spinning away, she grabbed Colt and marched into her room, slamming her door so hard it rattled the pictures on the wall. In the stillness of the empty room, he heard his heartbeat throbbing in his ears. Solitude didn't ease the tightness in his shoulders or back, either. He stared at her loopy signature and all those zeros on the check. She wouldn't even miss that money. Yet, the poorest people in Haiti ate mud cookies to fill their stomachs. The gap between those who had access to everything and those who struggled to survive burned in his stomach. Irrationally, he considered tearing up the gift. But anger wasn't fair, especially not when driven by envy of the fact that Gentry had the means to help where he could not. She had been generous with her money and time since they'd met. Frivolous, perhaps, but she certainly didn't owe him or Marie anything. Ian couldn't let his bruised pride cost Timmy Ormont his life. He stuffed the check in his pocket. His thoughts turned to his dad and their fight. To his 22-year-old self that had worried the path he'd been on would turn him into someone he might not like. Today proved that prophetic concern true. Ian had become much like his father, unable to relax, accept joy, or be playful for any length of time. Unable to accept or share intimacy. Spending most of his time surrounded by suffering and loss had taught him to detach so goodbyes wouldn't hurt. Gentry's bitterness came out through sarcasm. He now realized that his appeared as judgment, which he used to convince himself he wasn't missing out on the best parts of life. But he couldn't hide from the feelings Gentry had roused today. He couldn't pretend he wouldn't miss out on her. Reluctantly, he went to her room and knocked on the door.
"Go away," she snapped.
"Gentry."
"I'm pissed off, Ian. Trust me, now's not the time to talk."
"Okay." He took his hand off the doorknob. "I'm sorry." She didn't answer or open the door, so he ordered an Uber and then texted Archer. Only once seated in the car did Ian admit that he'd been sick with jealousy from the moment Hunter called with news of Smith. Jealousy, an ugly emotion, could fell any man, no matter how righteous. Self-righteous was more apt, actually. And suddenly, he felt very, very small.
Chapter 14. Skydiving. According to Merriam-Webster, the sport of jumping from an airplane and typically executing a prolonged free fall before deploying a parachute. According to me, telling Smith he's a father. The distinctive heavy click of the front door echoed throughout the condo. Sitting on the edge of her mattress, Gentry fell backward
and flung her arms across her eyes. Would Ian accept her help, or would she walk into the living room to find her check turned into confetti? As a mother, the thought of any child's terrified bewilderment provoked an urge to vomit, an unfortunate response when her stomach was already in knots because of Smith. She propped herself up on her elbows. Wallowing wouldn't do jack shit to help. She forced herself off the bed and checked on her son. Colt's eyelids hovered at half-mast, heavy from exhaustion. He looked peaceful, drifting off to sleep in the bassinet he'd almost outgrown, blissfully unaware of the surrounding chaos. Kneeling beside the bassinet, she traced his eyebrows with a feather-light touch. "Boo," she whispered. "Stop growing, please. I'm not ready to move you upstairs to the nursery. I need to keep you close." He yawned before his eyelids closed. Her precious little boy amazed her every day. It was all she could do to keep from picking him up and squeezing him tight. Whenever she decided to move Colt to his crib, she'd probably sleep in the guest room for a few weeks so she'd be nearby if he needed her. That wouldn't have been a problem before, but now that room would remind her of Ian. Gentry didn't pretend to be good at personal relationships, but by God, he was worse. If she were wise, she'd walk away and not look back. But no one had ever accused Gentry of being wise, nor did she ever back down from a fight. She wouldn't give up on Ian. Deep beneath all their walls, they shared a connection. A horribly inconvenient one that terrified them both. Colt shifted in his bassinet, drawing her attention. She'd have to wait to deal with Ian, because right now, she needed to contact Smith. "I love you," she whispered, before leaving her room and searching for the dossier on Peter Smith. Address, phone number, email. There it was, the Gmail account that gave her cold sweats. After pouring herself a healthy glass of Cabernet, she stared at the cursor pulsing on her laptop screen. How should she address him? Peter? Smith? Should she be businesslike or personal? Funny or serious? None of her choices sounded right. Ian had suggested her bluntness would be best, and although she had no fondness for him or his opinions at the moment, he probably had a point. Giving herself permission to write whatever popped into her head, she let her fingers type out her stream of consciousness. When she finished, she reread the note. "Dear Peter, welcome to a blast from your past. We met one evening last August in Napa. You knew me as Artemis, but my real name is Gentry Cabot. There is no easy way to say why I've tracked you down, so I'll just lay it out. You might want to sit down. You have a son. I've attached his picture, and you can see many more on this link, www.apronstringsandmommythings.com. His name is Colton Cabot, and he's got great lungs, despite being born a few weeks prematurely on April 15th. As you can see, he looks like your mini-me. If you want more proof, I'll provide whatever DNA sample you need." She paused for a moment, wondering if she'd been too cutesy about Colt's colic. Deleting that line, she revised it to read that he was healthy despite his premature birth. Satisfied with that correction, she continued reading. "To be clear, I'm not looking for financial support. In fact, I have no expectations or demands. I only sought you out because I realized that Colt would eventually have questions about his father. I wanted those answers for him, so I hired an investigator. I'm sorry for the shock, which I remember feeling when I discovered I was pregnant. For a brief time, I'd considered giving Colt up for adoption, but ultimately, I couldn't do it. While his conception was far from ideal, I'm a proud and happy single mom of the planet's most beautiful baby boy. I am also aware that, by not finding you sooner, you've missed precious months of his life. I'm sorry for that, and invite you to meet your son, if you wish. We live in Portland, Oregon, in Lake Sandy. Please write back to me if you are interested in any further involvement. If I don't hear from you, I will not contact you again. When Colt asks about you, however, I will tell him what I know. I've made a vow to never lie to him, which I hope you understand. Sincerely, Gentry Cabot. How perfectly ridiculous that sweat trickled down her back and between her breasts, despite the air conditioning being set at a brisk 68 degrees. She chugged the rest of her wine and hit send, then snapped the laptop closed. Oh, shit. Shit, shit, shit. She rocked herself, arms crossed over her stomach, bile fighting its way up her throat. It was done. She rocked faster, tears pooling, frantic. She closed her eyes and conjured up Hunter, the ultimate control freak. If he'd read anything troubling, he would have told her not to contact Smith, right? Then she remembered the connection Smith might have to Alec. She grabbed for her phone and dialed her sister. While the phone rang, she curled her body into a ball, hugging her knees to her chest beneath a hand-knit throw. When her sister answered, Gentry barked, Colby, I need to talk to Alec. What's wrong? You sound panicked. I am. I need to know if he ever met a Peter Smith at the culinary school in New York. She grabbed a nearby throw pillow and tucked it between her thighs and her chest. What? Peter Smith. Gentry then remembered that Hunter hadn't shared the fact that they'd found Peter with the family. Smith, Colby. Colt's father is Peter Smith. He's a master sommelier in San Francisco. He's only 32, but Hunter says he went to the same school as Alec. Holy Moses, that's a coincidence. Hang on. Her sister must have dropped the phone because Gentry couldn't hear her talking. A minute later, Alec's voice came through the line. Gentry? Alec, please tell me you have good news. Would you settle for the fact that I've got nothing bad to share? Since when did Alec speak in riddles? What's that mean? I don't remember him well. You know I've never been extroverted. There was a brief pause, as if Alec was trying to remember something to ease her mind. He seemed like a decent guy, but I can't recall more than that cursory impression. He had friends. I never heard anything negative about him. Basically, nothing that the PI report hadn't essentially revealed. I suppose that's good news, then. Small world, right? Very. Suddenly, she sat upright, letting the pillow and blanket fall away. Could Smith be Googling her this very minute? Scouring his own contacts and, in this small world, finding someone who knew her, or worse, knew of her. Given her antics and indiscriminate past, he might get the impression that his son deserved a better woman as a mother. Maybe Smith had a perfect girlfriend or wife, a Lily Pulitzer to his Brooks brothers. Someone like Sarah. Another cramp gripped her midsection. Gentry? Alec asked. I'm here. She held her forehead with her palm.
Thanks for sharing what you remember.
Sorry I can't be more helpful. Here, your sister's grabbing the phone.
Gentry heard the sound of a kiss before Colby got back on the line.
I can't believe you found Smith.
Peter. Maybe I should call him Peter.
She slunk back into the sofa cushions, weary.
Or Pete. Petey?
I doubt that one. Colby hesitated. Did you call him?
No. I chickened out and wrote him an email instead. Sent a photo of Colt.
Has he responded?
Gentry stared at the computer, which now resembled a weapon of mass destruction.
I don't know. I shut my laptop as soon as I sent it, and then called you. I'm afraid to look.
Do you want me to come over and wait with you? I can. The restaurant's closed on Sunday nights.
Gentry smiled at the offer. It was nice to hear the support, and was surely more than she'd get from her mother.
No, I've got my big girl pants handy.
And you've got Ian.
Gentry glanced at the door that Ian had yet to come back through.
Yeah. He's helpful.
Take a breath. It's going to be okay. You're doing the brave thing for your son, Gentry. Be proud.
Proud?
Nope. Can't say that's how I feel. Sick, doubtful, frantic, but not proud.
You should feel proud. These are tough decisions. You've got a lot on your plate, and you're managing it all.
Was she?
The charity work she'd planned on doing this evening would clearly not get done. Her son might or might not have reflux, not that she'd even come up with that theory. She'd slept with a man who consistently promised to leave town. All she seemed to be managing well was digging her own grave.
If you call alienating co-workers, fighting with my mom, and letting a stranger into my son's life managing well, who am I to argue?
She laughed, and it felt good. Loosened the tightness in her chest so she could draw some oxygen.
Are you sure you don't want me to come sit with you?
No, I think I'll do some Googling of my own now and see what else I can learn.
Of course, she should be working on those memes and media games for charity, not surfing the web.
Okay, call me if you change your mind.
I will.
Gentry hit off, feeling energized by her new mission. A one-day delay on social media wouldn't make or break the campaign. She needed to prepare for meeting Smith. Needed to gain insight to handle the man who had the power to change her whole world. She opened up her laptop and, without checking her email, Googled Peter Smith, Master Sommelier, San Francisco. That search returned dozens of mentions and a few blog posts written by Peter. Apparently, being a Master Sommelier was a BFD. Only 229 of them in the whole world? This was good. This meant he had discipline and ambition and passion. Three excellent traits that he might have passed on to Colt.
And wine? Who didn't love wine?
With that reminder, she refilled her glass to prep for a long night of reading. An hour later, she'd scoured interviews, blog posts, and social media pages. He never referred to a wife, although she did see photos of him with a woman and a child. Could that be his sister and niece? Or did he have a family of his own already? A family of his own would keep him occupied and less apt to glom onto her and Colt. Then again, that situation would make Colt be like her, having half-siblings and a part-time family, which wasn't ideal either. She supposed she should take heart in the fact that everything she'd read reassured her that Smith could be a good role model. A modern man with a normal life, unlike Ian Crawford. She stared at the Google search bar. With one finger, she tapped out Ian Crawford, Portland, Oregon, and hit return. Surprisingly, there were several Ian Crawfords in the area. Her Ian, however, left a nearly invisible digital footprint. A single years-old mention in a local paper for something connected to a prior EMT job. No active social media account that she could find. His father's obituary. That got her attention. She pulled up the post, which featured a prominent photograph of Brian Crawford. As she'd suspected, Ian physically resembled his father, although more handsome. She read the obituary, noting phrases like restoring community one person at a time, and endless energy, and service on community boards, and on and on. She suspected the funeral service must have filled an entire chapel. Having grown up in the shadow of highly successful parents, she could imagine how Ian struggled to live up to his father's example. From the sound of things, his mother hadn't exactly overcompensated for his father's absence either. Gentry pictured Ian, young and wide-eyed, working his butt off to be like his parents instead of bucking them at every turn, as she'd done. They'd handled life differently, but she had no doubt that both she and Ian had never felt unconditional love. He could deny it all he wanted. She knew better. He needed love, and he needed it from someone like her who understood why he pushed it all away. The front door opened, rousing her from her thoughts. Ian stepped inside and closed the door. He stared at her, sighed, and shrugged. "I'm sorry, I was such an ass." Gentry set down her glass and strode toward him, arms open wide, and embraced him without a word, once again defying his expectations. He wrapped his arms around her and rested his cheek on the top of her head. "I didn't expect forgiveness." "Someday you'll stop trying to predict my next move," she mumbled against his chest, before easing far enough away to look up at him. "Oddly, the fact that you suck at intimacy makes me feel better, less alone in my fucked upness." If only that solved anything. "Glad to be of service." "A role I know you enjoy," she quipped. "Please, tell me you deposited my check."
"I didn't." He removed it from his pocket.
She scowled, stepping back. "Okay, now I'm getting mad again."
"Hold up."
He stuffed the check in her pocket.
"Archer said to wait. The family is making a counteroffer, while the police are working with an informant who might lead them to the boy."
"You said the cops don't usually get involved. Are you lying to me now because you don't want to take my money?"
"Seems things have gotten a little better recently, since some New York cop came and instituted some training to turn the system around.
And if that cop could work miracles, maybe Ian could too. Training locals, empowering them, and making a difference that would strengthen an entire nation. He had to believe the sacrifices he'd make would be worthwhile."
"I wonder how long that'll last." Her cynical sigh followed.
"It'll last. Most people there want a better life. The Haitians are, by and large, determined, resilient people, and surprisingly hopeful, despite the constant setbacks."
Gentry clasped his hand and led him to the sofa, then sat beside him, cross-legged. "I don't want to talk about Haiti.
Let's talk about today.
About Smith?
He'd been heartless to walk out on her after she'd been handed life-changing information. About everything. We can't pretend like nothing has changed. I know you have your mission, but isn't there any way this might work?
I think my failed engagement proves it can't.
Ian quirked a brow.
And in case you missed the clues today, I'm not exactly good at relationships.
Neither am I. I can't tell you how many guys I've cycled through.
I'd rather you didn't, actually.
She poked him, smiling.
Look at you, McJay, making jokes.
Had he been joking? He wasn't sure. She leaned against him like a puppy, tucking her head against his shoulder. I'm good for you. Stick with me and you'll laugh more before you die.
That's some sales pitch.
He allowed himself a minute to enjoy the weight of her body resting against his.
He sensed danger when she fell silent, because no one could predict the direction of Gentry's thoughts, least of all him.
She kept her head on his shoulder, avoiding eye contact. Neither of us got much attention from our parents. Neither of us has had a healthy love life. Neither of us likes being vulnerable.
None of those similarities are arguments in favor of this working, you know?
He felt her shrug.
I've got a thing for underdogs.
Not a surprise. He held himself still, unable to give over to her will and throw caution to the wind.
But you're forgetting something important. Smith.
Peter, she corrected.
Peter shares a child with you.
We accidentally made a baby. That's it.
It's a big thing, Gentry.
He set his index finger against her lips to force her to think before she spoke.
After a second or two, he removed his hand.
Maybe not, she said. Maybe he'll want nothing to do with us.
That's not what you want for Colt.
No, she admitted quietly. But co-parenting isn't dating.
True enough. People co-parented all the time without dating. Divorced parents managed it too.
Biology alone wasn't a good enough reason for Ian to run away from his feelings.
Did you contact him?
She nodded.
What did he say?
Ian simultaneously hoped Peter Smith had been eloquent and idiotic, because the best and worst thing that could happen would be for Gentry to actually like Smith. I don't know. I sent an email a while ago and am too afraid to look for his reply, she grimaced. Reluctantly, Ian asked for a summary of Peter Smith from San Francisco. After she finished reciting the mostly impersonal data, he said,
"He sounds like a pretty good fit for your life."
She slapped his thigh. "More snap judgments."
"He's affluent, likes to travel, enjoys wine."
Ian nodded toward her empty wine glass.
"And you did find him attractive."
"You just described a hell of a lot of men I've known, Ian. None of them fit so far." She pulled away and twisted to face him. "You know, I thought you were cute when I went into labor, but the timing wasn't right. Then you showed up here, all patient and kind, without expecting anything in return. You've helped me with Colt, Ty, work, even my own doubts about whether or not I can do this whole motherhood thing. I've never had someone believe in me like that. Everything feels different, and now I don't know what to do with all of this." She motioned with her hands, like she was trying to grab onto clouds. "Honestly, life was easier when I cared less." He couldn't help but smile, because she'd been right about one thing. They were the same when it came to incompetence in the tricky world of romance. He cupped her face and kissed her.
I get it, but there's a lot at stake, mostly for you and Colt. You should see what Smith has to say before we consider possibilities.
She wrinkled her nose and stared at her laptop. Her inbox was like the wardrobe in that Narnia book. Once she'd opened it, life as she knew it could change forever. Gentry shot him a "here goes nothing" look and opened her email account. Biting her thumbnail, she stared at the screen. Ian's heart jumped when he saw Peter's reply in the inbox.
"I'll let you read it in private."
When he moved to leave, her hand landed on his thigh.
"Please stay."
It seemed wrong to read a private note from a man who just learned, out of the blue, about his son. But Ian couldn't turn down Gentry's pleading gaze.
"Okay."
"Thanks." After a deep inhalation, she muttered, "Okay, Smith, what have you got to say?"
"Gentry. Of course I remember you, Artemis, rather fondly. However, I didn't expect your email, and am now sitting here in a state of shock. Please don't take this the wrong way, but although Colt resembles my baby photos, I'd be foolish not to confirm his paternity. My quick research says we can get DNA results in 1 to 2 days. That's not to say that I think you're lying. I don't. At least I believe you believe he is mine. The possibility that I'm a new father is equally terrifying and exciting. I adore my 2 nieces and have envied my sister for a few years. Unlike her family, though, our situation is not ideal. And while you've had time to get to adjust and adapt, I've got lots of catching up to do. Frankly, it may take a few days to catch my breath. I won't share this news with my family until I confirm Colt's paternity and we have a chance to talk. However, I have a feeling my father will be thrilled to finally have a grandson, despite the unusual circumstances. Let's coordinate the test, and once we have the results, I will arrange to visit. I think the sooner the better. Smith." Ian didn't ask about the Artemis reference. He didn't ask if Gentry was insulted by the DNA test request. He didn't even ask her to wait until he left to invite Smith to visit, although the selfish part of him wished she would.
"Are you okay?"
She nodded, her eyes glued to the screen, apparently rereading the short note several times.
"He seems rational, right? I mean, this is a pretty open, calm response. Almost friendly, even."
"Yes."
In contrast, Ian was finding it difficult to remain rational and open to discussing this, which suggested that Smith must be a damn confident man.
"He's not angry or jerky, like he could have been."
Her eyes were wide and still focused on the screen, teeth feverishly chewing her thumbnail. Ian scratched the back of his neck, but it did little to help the itchiness taking over his body.
"Nope, not angry."
"This part about his sister and dad means he must be close to his family. That's a good sign, right?"
She'd begun rocking herself, although he doubted she noticed. "If I have to share Colt, I want it to be with someone who loves his family." Those last words came out with a choked sob, and then Gentry hunched forward in a mess of tears right there in front of him. He threw his arm around her shoulders and pulled her close.
"Shh, shh, it's okay. It'll be okay."
She sniffed and wiped her face with her hands, body trembling from the ebb and flow of adrenaline
this email had wrought. When she looked up, her brows were furrowed in a tight knot, worry lines fanning out from the corners of her eyes.
I don't want to share my son. I mean, I want Colt to have a father and more people who love him, but I don't want to send him away for long visits. I can't stand the idea of being away from him. I can't.
Hysteria tinged those last words. Ian wiped tears away and gripped her shoulders, forcing her to hold his gaze.
Don't jump ahead. Take things one step at a time.
First, meet Peter.
Then, if he wants to take Colt to meet his family, you go with them. You don't have to hand Colt over until you're comfortable, okay?
This guy doesn't sound like the type who plans to bully you or take you to court. Remind him that you two need to put Colt's interests first, and it will all be okay.
She wiped her nose with her shirt while mumbling, "This is the right thing to do. I'm doing the right thing."
He nodded, praying that he hadn't inadvertently pushed her into a choice that might hurt her.
Chapter 15. Catch 22. According to Merriam-Webster, a problematic situation for which the only solution is denied by a circumstance inherent in the problem or by a rule. According to me, building family ties for my son. Gentry wove through CTC's hallways in a daze, thanks to a whopping 2 hours sleep last night. If the time she'd spent awake in bed had been with Ian, she'd be skipping through the office. To her chagrin, once he'd held her long enough to calm her down, he'd sent her to bed alone. Smith's reply had given Ian pause, and he insisted they take time to think. So she'd alternated between staring at the ceiling and then gazing at her son, praying for the strength to be stronger than her mom had been when it came to blending families. Gentry, where are the latest updates to the social media strategy and new graphics? Her mom stood in her office doorway, having clearly been on the lookout for her arrival. Gentry stopped, too tired to think of a snappy comeback.
I'll copy you when I send them.
Her mother shook her head.
They're not completed?
I got a little sidetracked this weekend.
Gentry eyed her distant workstation turned prison, wishing she'd made it there before getting stopped by her mother.
Sidetracked? The launch is less than 2 months away. Now isn't the time to get sidetracked by some new hobby or the nanny.
Mom, stop. I'd planned to finish it last night, but...
She glanced over her shoulder before muttering, "We found Smith." Gentry watched the Ice Queen lean against the door jamb, speechless. They stared at each other, neither moving. A silly fantasy, one involving her mom's open arms and a supportive hug, drifted through Gentry's sleep-deprived brain. It died when her mom said, "Come into my office and close the door." Becky passed by in time to catch that ominous command, so now everyone would know Gentry had messed up again. This time, they weren't entirely wrong, though. She should have been working on Sunday instead of running around Portland with Ian. Then again, she didn't regret that afternoon. Not even a little. Ian, flawed man that he was, made her think. He made her want to be a better person. And he might not see it yet, but he needed her, because she had a lot to teach him about joy. Until last night, she'd never considered that she might have inherited a little of Grandpa John's gambler gene,
But at 3 a.m., when she'd considered racing upstairs and going all in on a long-shot gamble with Ian, she understood more about the pull of addiction. Wisely, she'd folded and stayed in her room. "Sit." Her mom pointed to the empty chair before taking her seat behind her beloved desk, the one that Gentry had never been allowed to use for coloring or eating lunch or anything else that other kids got to do at their parents' offices. "Why didn't you call your father and me yesterday?" "I didn't want everyone's opinions. Ultimately, this is about my son and, to a lesser extent, me. I emailed Peter, that's his real name, and he replied late last night." "So, it's done. You've opened your son's life up to a stranger." Her mother tapped her hands on the desktop. "What if he's a terrible influence? What if he wants joint custody? And you wonder why I didn't turn to you for support?" Gentry let her head fall back. Eyes closed, she prayed for patience, although she could have easily fallen asleep, too. "I am supportive. I've picked you up after every mistake, Gentry. Don't pretend there haven't been many along the way." Gentry counted to 5 in her head. Yes. She'd made mistakes, maybe even some big ones, but nothing that had ever ruined her life or anyone else's. "Do me the courtesy of looking at me," came her mother's exasperated voice. Gentry complied. "Are you finished, or are there other criticisms you'd like to pile on before you ask me to go be creative?" "As if you don't criticize me at every turn," her mom rubbed her temples. "Despite your perspective, I've killed myself to give you every advantage and opportunity, including giving you a good man as a father. And when it comes time to battle Peter over Colt, who will be fighting for you every step of the way?" "Me, that's who." "Please, stop acting like you worked so hard to give me things. This fiefdom is about your ego, your needs. You never once asked what I wanted. But let me tell you, all I ever wanted was to matter to someone. How many Sundays did I wish Colby and Hunter would take me to Leslie's so I could be part of a real family?" "What a rotten, ungrateful thing to say." Her mother's eyes glistened. "I gave you the kind of life I only dreamed of as a child." Gentry hadn't seen her mom teary very often, so it threw her. She shifted in her chair, softening her tone. "Your dreams, Mom, not mine. Now, I'm asking you to back off a little. I'm sure I'll make mistakes with my son, but I don't need your parenting advice. Whatever resentments Colt might have one day, they won't be because I kept him from his father and a family that might love him. No matter how tough it is on me, Colt deserves to know his father." Her mother flattened her palms on her desk. "And who exactly is Peter? Am I allowed to know that much?" Gentry's head pounded. She craved sleep. Barring that, an escape from her mother's office would be nice, too. Robotically, she recited Peter's resume and summarized their emails. "When's he coming?" "On Friday." Her mother tapped her fingernails on her desk. "Will your father and I get to meet him?" "I'd like to spend the first day alone with him and Colt. On Saturday, you and Dad can come over for dinner." Her home. Her rules. "Maybe Hunter and Sarah can join us, too. Colby and Alec will have to work, I guess."
Will Peter be staying with you?
No.
So you're not interested in a romantic relationship?